face, with a wink at the other wizards. "The shadow? What does that mean? Where did it go?" Corin sputtered. Mwaza waved his hand through where the teapot had been. "The Shadow Realm is the land of spirits. It exists next to us, but we can't see it."
"We usually can't see it," Madame Chu corrected. "When the—"
"Yes, yes, don't fill the boy's head with details right now." Mwaza waved her away. "Now, watch this." The wizard closed his eyes in concentration, muttered some foreign words under his breath, and the teapot reappeared, right where it had been. Corin clapped his hands with delight. "Oh, that is powerful magic, sir." Mwaza smiled and took a short bow to acknowledge the applause. "No, it is truly very simple. That's why I call it a mere trick. Casting an item into the Shadow Realm is one of the first tests of apprentice wizards' ability to control their power. You will—" Mwaza caught himself, as the other wizard's eyebrows raised in alarm. That is, you will see truly powerful magic during your time with Pedrus." Corin stood up to clear away the dishes, but Pedrus waved for him to sit. "Relax, relax, young man. You've been cleaning up after us, tired old—" "Who are you calling old?" Shomus interrupted. "Gang of wizards for too long now. It's a fine day. Let's all of us go out for a ride. I need to get out of this stuffy old tower, and it would be a shame to waste a sunny day, with winter approaching so quickly." "Pedrus," Lord Mwaza said slowly, while rummaging around in a great leather bag he'd brought. "I wonder—" "Ah, here it is." He pulled a small wooden box from the bag, a battered old box made of dark stained wood with worn copper hinges.
"You wonder what, Cecil?"
Pedrus responded absent-mindedly, engaging simultaneously in reading a book, sipping tea, and toasting a crust of bread over the fire. It was late afternoon, not yet time for a hearty dinner, and the wizard was hungry again. True, he had a fine breakfast, a late and very large breakfast, but they'd ridden far into the countryside, an endeavor that encouraged an appetite.
"I'd like to try something. With my cards."
Mwaza opened the box, pulled out a pack of playing cards, and set them on the table. The cards were also well worn, but unlike regular playing cards, these were blank on one side. The other side was inscribed with mysterious symbols well known by Mwaza, but some of the symbols were a bit of a mystery, even to Pedrus. Pedrus forced himself to pay attention.
"Cards? Oh, your fortune cards."
He frowned, then turned in surprise, which caused his almost perfectly done piece of toast to fall off the stick into the fire.
"Oh, darn it! Have you found something new?"
he asked excitedly, hopefully.
"No, not yet. I keep thinking about Corin. No, never mind. It's foolish. What is it?"
"A feeling."
"It's silly. Forget about it."
Pedrus set down his book and tea mug.
"Cecil, you know better than I that sometimes a feeling is the spirit world trying to talk to us. You are the most sensitive of us to call on the spirits. What is your feeling telling you?"
"A vague feeling that, now, maybe something is different. That something has changed. I've had the feeling ever since I first met Corin. I would like to see if I can read the boy's future with these cards."
"We haven't been able to read fortunes in—"
"Yes, I know," Mwaza said quickly. "I know. I have a feeling, as you said."
"Let's see," Corin! Corin, come here!
Pedrus walked over to a cabinet and got a thin needle.
You call for me, sir,
Corin said, out of breath from racing up the stairs. From the state of the boy's clothing, the wizard surmised his servant had been scrubbing something, perhaps a floor, from the dirt on the knees of his pants.
Yes, quite so.
Pedrus exchanged a glance with Lord Muazzo. He didn't wish to alarm Corin.
You seem to enjoy Muazzo's magic tricks over the breakfast table. Would you like to see some real magic?
Oh, yes, sir.
Good. Muazzo here would like to try reading your fortune, if we can. It requires a drop of your blood. A single tiny drop. You understand? I will prick your finger with this thin needle, and we'll put a drop of blood on this card.
Corin wasn't thrilled with the idea of a wizard needing his blood. That sounded vaguely like part of a spell wizards used to turn people into frogs, or something more horrible. He couldn't back out now, and he did want to see more magic, so he nodded. Over the table, Pedrus carefully pricked Corin's finger and squeezed a drop of blood onto a blank card held by Lord Muazzo. The drop of blood was absorbed so quickly, it was as if it had fallen right through the card.
Still nothing,
Pedrus expressed disappointedly, as the card remained blank.
Well, not every—
Shh,
Muazzo hissed. The card is not blank. He peered closely, intensely concentrating.
Are you sure?
Pedrus asked skeptically, leaning over to see the card closer.
The firelight can be—
The powerful wizard sucked in a breath. Is it?
Do you see what I see?
Muazzo looked up hopefully. Looked up in hope and confusion.
I don't understand. I can't truly see anything. It is as if the images—
Yes, yes.
Images flickered across the face of the card, impossibly fast. The wizards were unable to bring an image into focus, not a single one, not even when Pedrus hurriedly cast a spell to slow their perception of time. Corin was greatly alarmed by that spell, for Pedrus had been in such a frantic hurry that he hadn't explained what he was doing. Suddenly, the room had dimmed for a moment. The flames in the fireplace slowed, so they appeared to be made of a sluggish liquid, which Corin found fascinating. The images on the card still flickered too fast for Corin to really see anything. Then the spell dispersed, the room brightened, the fireplace went back to crackling flames, and the card was again blank, with no trace of blood on it.
What did you see?
Pedrus asked wearily, slumping into a chair. The time spell was draining, and casting it so hurriedly had exhausted the master wizard. His hand shook when he reached for a mug of tea.
Nothing, said Muazzo, master of his own type of wizardry. I almost... No, nothing. But there was something there.
What were all those pictures, sir?
Lord Muazzo? Corin asked innocently.
Pictures?
Pedrus looked up sharply.
Muazzo leaned forward eagerly.
Corin, you saw something? What was it?
It was...
Corin fought for the proper words.
Not something, sirs. It was more like everything.
Everything all at once. So fast it all blurred together. Men on horses, and fighting, and skeletons, and fields of flowers, and sunshine and storms, and farmers bringing in crops, and people dancing, celebrating something, and darkness, and something horrible.
Horrible.
He shuddered. Also, you think I saw the ocean, sirs. Islands in the ocean. And mountains. Tall mountains with their tops covered in ice, even in summertime.
Muazzo?
Pedrus inquired with a raised eyebrow.
What does this mean?
It means, the Law Master said with a deliberate look at Pedrus, that my fortune cards are still unable to see the future. What he saw sounds like a jumble of all the cards. He turns to Corin.
I'm sorry, Corin. Sometimes this works and sometimes it doesn't.
It is nearly time for dinner. Why don't you run over to the kitchens and see what they're preparing for us?
Corin knew when the wizards wanted to talk in private.
Yes, sirs.
He bowed slightly and left. If he was disappointed to not know more of his future, it didn't show, for he was still trying to recall more of the amazing images he'd seen.
Lord Salva, Muazzo said, after Corin had gone back down the stairs. Perhaps it is time to see your fortune.
You think that will work?
I think it will help me understand what Corin's fortune means.
It didn't help Pedrus, for the fortune card remained perfectly, frustratingly blank, as it had for everyone recently. Beginning, Moisa recalled, 12 years ago, the ability of wizards to see the future, or to be more accurate, to see which possible futures were most likely to occur, had begun to fade. Within the last 5 years, the fortune cards had been blank, completely blank. Except today. Except Corin's future.
Blank again, as always, Pedrus said in disappointment.
Not quite, Muazzo announced, holding the card up to his eyes and examining it from various angles. There is something there. Two images, very faint, fading in and out, like they are trying to form, but the spirits yet lack the power.
Which images?
Muazzo carefully put the cards back in the box.
I would rather not tell you yet, for I very well could be wrong, and lead us all down the wrong path. I can say, with very little certainty, mind you, that I think, I get the impression, that one image is a crown.
A crown?
Pedrus looked puzzled. For all his wizardly power, he lacked the Law Master's insight into the arcane spirit world.
A crown is in my future.
The Don Salva family was sort of nobility in his homelands, but it had been many, many years since Pedrus had been there, and many before that since he'd last exercised any of the legal powers of a Don. When he'd departed La Murta to fight the enemy in Tarador, he had left his lands to his children, except for leaving a large part of the olive groves to the townspeople.
A crown affects your future, Lord Salva. A crown determines your future.
Huh, I could have told you that, without using your cards. When the princess becomes queen, no.
Muazzo stood up, stretched his tall frame until his fingers nearly touched the ceiling, and strode over to stand closer to the fireplace, stirring the logs with a poker.
Not the jewel-encrusted crown of a queen, nor a princess. What I saw, what I think I saw, was a rather simple gold circle. And this future is soon, not far off, when your Ariana becomes queen.
A simple gold circle? I've seen that many times. That's the regent's crown,
Pedrus said sourly. Her mother. The next morning, the four wizards requested an audience with the regent to discuss matters of great importance to the future of Tarador, according to the note that Corin delivered to the palace chief of protocol. Kalana invited the wizards to dine in the palace that evening, which meant Corin was busy the whole day getting four sets of wizard robes cleaned and pressed. Even so, as they were about to leave the tower, Corin saw to his great distress that Shomas had a big stain down the front of his robe from a blackberry pastry he had been eating.
Shomas! Madam Chu wagged a finger at her fellow wizard. We are going to eat dinner in the palace. Couldn't you wait?
Oh, you know how these royal dinners go, Shomas grumbled. Lots of talk and little bits of fancy food. A man needs something substantial to fill his belly.
He tried to wipe away the stain, but only smeared it deeper into the fabric of his robe. Corin brought a wet cloth to clean as best he could, but Madam Chu waved him aside.
Corin, dear, you have been so kind to us. Let me take care of this for you.
Touching her hand to the blob of jelly, she whispered words under her breath, and the robe was clean.
It's not really clean, she explained, but the stain will be invisible for a while. Now, Shomas, try not to embarrass us tonight, please.
Although Corin, in his official purple robes, escorted the wizards to Kalana's private dining chamber in the palace, he was not allowed to serve them at dinner. Even the palace servants, after they brought the food and drink, were told to wait outside, and the doors firmly shut. Corin stood in the hallway, wishing he had eaten something before coming to the palace. The door on the other side of the hallway opened, and Ariana waved him to join her.
I'm supposed to be working, Corin protested half-heartedly.
Oh, don't worry about that. They'll be in there for hours. Mother and Pedras love to argue. Are you hungry?
I could eat, Corin admitted, when he saw the delicious dinner waiting in Ariana's private dining chamber.
He still felt vaguely nervous around Ariana, although it wasn't as bad now.
Why aren't you in there with the wizards? You're the crown princess.
Mother never lets me hear when she is talking about anything secret.
Ariana stuck her lower lip out in a pout, and Corin thought that was the cutest thing he'd ever seen.
Do you know what they're talking about?
Corin shook his head.
Mother says it must be important. We haven't had this many wizards in the castle since I was a little girl.
All they've been doing is talking and reading a lot of dusty old books and scrolls, and they argue a lot. Except...
Corin paused, with a buttered roll halfway to his mouth. They stopped arguing a couple days ago. After they asked him questions about his family, and then held hands and chanted around him. And then he'd had a dream about the wizard standing over him while he'd been asleep.
What happened?
I don't know.
Corin lied. He didn't think Pedras wanted anyone to know what went on inside the wizard's tower. Whatever involved him couldn't be important anyway.
He shrugged. Who knew about wizards?
I guess they agreed about whatever they were arguing about.
That must be why they're with Mother, to tell her what they decided.
I hope Pedras doesn't try to get her to send the army out again in the spring. They have that argument every year.
If Pedras thinks three more wizards are going to change my mother's mind, he's in for a surprise.
Corin frowned at Ariana's remark. The regent was powerful, to be sure, but more powerful than four wizards, or even Pedras alone.
Your Highness, do you know how powerful Lord Salva really is?
Your Highness?
Ariana asked with a tilt of her head.
Corin, please call me Ariana, when we're alone.
Or nearly alone, she added with a nod to her maid, Norelka, who sat discreetly by the window.
I need someone who can talk to me as me, not by my official title. I have too many people who do that.
All right.
Ariana.
The name sounded strange in his mouth, saying it to her in person. Being around the wizards, who were first formal, then friendly, and now dressed in their official robes and meeting in the royal palace with the regent behind closed doors, had Corrin confused again. "Do you know wizards can make things disappear and then come back? I saw Lord Muazzo do that to a teapot, right in front of me. He sent it into the spirit world."
"I think I've heard of that, but I've never seen it."
"It must have been amazing," Arianna hastened to add, when she saw Corrin was disappointed his revelation was not something new to her.
"Can't Pedras do something like that? He hardly ever does any magic that I can see."
Corrin knew that Pedras didn't show off his magical powers in public, because real magic was serious business, and he felt that the court wizard was not to be viewed as a circus performer. If people wanted to see silly magic tricks, they could give a couple coins to one of the charlatan street performers in Linden.
"Anything Muazzo can do, Pedras can do. But don't repeat that, please. Lord Muazzo was kind of touchy about his, I guess, status as a wizard."
"I would never tell anyone something you told me in confidence," Arianna said, while reaching out to hold Corrin's right hand between her own hands. The gesture was so natural, offering reassurance between close friends, that she didn't realize what she was doing until Norelka discreetly coughed in her corner by the window.
Thank you,
Corrin stammered out, flustered by the feel of the princess's warm, soft hand. Even after she released his hand, and looked a bit embarrassed herself, he could feel his hand tingle, and he self-consciously made his hand into a fist and tucked it behind his back.
What was I saying?
"You were, something about Lord Muazzo."
Arianna was thinking that Corrin's hand had felt warm and rough. Rough like the hand of a farmer, a worker, or a soldier. She liked that. So many of the royal boys and men that she knew had soft hands, for they had never done any labor in their lives. Rough felt good.
"Oh, yeah."
Now Corrin felt warm all over, like when the wizards had been chanting around him on the rooftop, but for an entirely different, entirely natural and wonderful reason. To stall for time, while his mind was overwhelmed, he took a goblet of water, but his hand shook, and he spilled a few droplets down his chin. Without thinking, he wiped his chin with the back of his shirt sleeve, an action that would have completely horrified Charles Fusting, with Corrin wearing his best clothes, especially as those clothes were still barely passable for an audience with the Crown Princess.
Sorry, he said,
and pulled a proper handkerchief out of his pocket.
So, Lord Muazzo, he made a teapot disappear,
Corrin continued, while looking out the window to avoid looking at Arianna, because right then he was having terribly improper thoughts about his future queen. Thoughts that could get a common-born boy like him hanged, or at least thrown in a dungeon. Arianna Trehame was the highest-born person in Tarador, while he couldn't even claim the name Bladewell anymore, since his family had abandoned him. Thinking about his parents helped him focus on something other than the warm, kind, beautiful, sweet-smelling girl standing close to him, with her soft skin and...
"Do you know Pedras built a stairway that doesn't exist?" he blurted out.
"Doesn't exist? What do you mean?"
Arianna asked, while watching her maid out of the corner of her eye. Arianna wished the kindly Norelka would just go away. But the woman had risen from her seat and approached the table.
"Would you like hot tea, my lady?" Norelka asked. "This pot has gone cold."
"No, it's fine, Nori. We're fine."
Arianna waved the woman away with irritation, but the maid, with a small, knowing smile, stood by the table.
"How could someone build a stairway that doesn't exist? You must be joking, young Corrin," Norelka prodded.
No, it's true. He showed me. Corin explained about the magic portal in the tower as best he could, and by the time he was halfway through the story, even Ariana was interested, although she was still irritated at her maid, and irritated at the strict rules a crown princess had to follow. She would be the most powerful person in the realm soon, but right now she couldn't even innocently hold hands with a boy. Or maybe not quite so innocently.
"You'll not catch me going into that tower, young Corin," Norelka declared. "I don't know as how you do it. Night after night, sleeping in there, with strange lights flashing, and the wizard casting spells."
She shuddered, and put her hand to her forehead dramatically.
"Didn't know wizards could make staircases out of thin air."
"I didn't either," Ariana said, troubled, but excited. What else could the wizard do? She'd seen him heal people, but when the wizard laid hands on a sick person, there wasn't anything to see when he did that. And she'd heard wizards could throw balls of glowing fire, but she'd never seen Pedrus do that.
"Can he fly?"
"No," Corin shook his head. "But he can walk on a rooftop, or along a ledge, like me strolling down a flat road. I saw him do that at Duke Yaren's castle. And he can talk to hawks. He can put pictures in a hawk's mind." Ariana thought that she needed to have a talk with the Lord Salva about what wizards could and could not do. She was learning about the army, strategy, tactics, and Captain Radic had been explaining to her something called logistics. Sending an army into the field at the right place and the right time was all good, but if that army didn't have proper weapons and food and hay or grain for their horses, and shelter if they were going to be out in the elements for long, then the most brilliant strategy in the world could not bring victory. Even simple things like spare parts to fix broken wagon wheels were important. And all the logistics cost money. A lot of money. Ariana had been dismayed to see how much it was costing her own purse to keep her personal guard stationed in the Thralrin woods. Her mother had insisted that money come from Ariana's own rather small sum of funds, and not from the royal treasury. The soldiers of her personal guard drew their monthly pay from the royal treasury, but when they were in the field, their supplies were paid by Ariana. And, although she was a princess, the crown princess, she didn't actually have much money of her own. Not yet. That had been a lesson for the young girl to think ahead, and not act impulsively.
"I wonder what they're talking about in there," Ariana said,
as she looked into the hallway, at the door to where her mother and the wizards were dining, and likely arguing.
"You are all in agreement, then?" Kalana asked.
The four wizards nodded, and Muazzo spoke. "The boy's power is truly frightening. Astonishing would be a better description. It was like looking into the noonday sun. And his power is still growing. Until he is ready to learn to control his power by himself, we need to keep his abilities hidden, even from the boy." "Especially from the boy," Shomus added quietly.
"Are you certain that is necessary?" Kalana asked sharply. "You said that in a few short years, when his power becomes so great it is impossible to conceal, you will trust Corin with his immense power. Yet you do not trust the same boy now, when his power is so much less. It seems a contradiction."
The other wizards looked to Pedrus as he pondered how to respond. To give himself time to think, he drained the last drops from his wine glass, refilled it from the decanter in the middle of the table, swirled the wine in the glass, held the glass up to the light for inspection, and finally took a sip.
"Ah, that is good wine. The issue is not whether Corin Bladewell, until recently a farm boy from a small little noted village, can be trusted to use his power.
The issue is whether he can be trusted not to use his power. To not use his power until he is ready to use it, without injuring or killing himself, until he can actually control his power. If he tried to use his power now, it would certainly come to the notice of the enemy. And then Corrin would be in grave danger, for he would be unable to control his power enough to defend himself. Can he be trusted to not use his power if he saw someone in trouble or he is attacked? No. Pedrus shook his head. The temptation is too great. Consider, Madam Regent, your own daughter. She too will be entrusted with immense power in a few short years. If she had the power now to defend you from your opponents on the Regency Council, could she be trusted to conceal such power for years, no matter what the situation? The Regent took a sip of her own wine.
Perhaps not. No, she couldn't. Could anyone?
Then I don't see that we have any other choice but to conceal the truth from Corrin. But I fear you are playing with fire, and it will blow up in our faces some day.
How so? Pedrus asked.
Lord Salva, to you wizards, Corrin is a mystery, a gift unlooked for, a reason to believe that we will win this war. You see his potential as a weapon against Asador, but he is also a young man, like any other young man. Consider this. Corrin was exiled from his hometown because he is a wizard. His parents abandoned him in the wilderness because they were afraid of him. He lost his family because they didn't know the truth. He saved my daughter's life, and the only reward we gave him is a life of drudgery as a common servant. My daughter tells me that some of the other servants around the castle are mean to Corrin because they are jealous of him. Someday, not too far from now, Corrin will learn that all his troubles are caused by his wizard power, and that we conspired to deceive him and hide the truth from him. Lord Salva, you told me Corrin's life has been jinxed, that he has been cheated, that his destiny has been stolen from him. We here, around this table, have conspired to continue that deception. To cheat him of the life that should rightfully be his, should have been his. These deceptions are well intended, I'm sure. But when he learns the truth, he is likely to be angry. An angry and very powerful young man. And the people who mistreated him might be very sorry about that.
The four wizards all looked down into their mugs of wine.
Pedrus let out a long breath and slumped away from the table.
I fear the same, and have been afraid to say it. Whether Corrin will ultimately resist the temptation to use his power for revenge, I cannot say. He is a decent boy, and very resilient. Most boys who went through everything that has happened to Corrin would be bitter and angry. Corrin is mostly happy. He is loyal to his friends, and the stablemaster tells me all the men there treat him with respect and affection. I have only known Corrin for a short time, but I think the goodness of his character exceeds even his power. Mawazo cleared his throat.
We too often use the word destiny lightly, he said, in a tone that implied we did not include himself. Whatever the personal cost to him, I believe what has happened to Corrin so far is his destiny, however unfortunate for the boy and his family. If his power had been discovered early, he would not have been considered a jinx around his village. His family would not have been exiled from their home. His parents would not have abandoned him. He would not have been there in the wilderness when Princess Ariana needed him, and Tarador would now be torn apart by the royal families fighting over succession to the throne, leaving us ripe for invasion by Asador. If Corrin has been jinxed,
has been cheated, he has not been cheated by us. He has been cheated by his own destiny.
I do not know where his destiny leads, but I cannot believe it a coincidence that he arrives here, now, unlooked for, just as our need for such power is greatest. Whether he accepts his destiny or becomes bitter at it will likely determine our own futures and the future of this land.
Madame Chu nudged Pedrus under the table.
Speaking of the future, Lady Trehame,
Kalana braced for the inevitable argument about sending the royal army out on adventures once the weather warmed,
an argument for which she had a ready answer. No. No, not this year. Again.
Lord Muazzo wishes to read your fortune, if he can,
Pedrus continued. Kalana was unprepared for this request.
Read my fortune? I thought you were no longer able to do that.
Recent events have raised the possibility that may be changing, Muazzo said carefully. We thought, since, as regent, you influenced the fate of so many people, that the path of your fortune would be strong enough to overcome the difficulties we have communicating with the spirit world in that area of magic.
I see.
Kalana saw right through Muazzo's clumsy attempt at flattery.
You wish a drop of my blood. I believe that is how your spell works.
Yes, Lady Kalana,
Muazzo said, with surprising hope. He hadn't expected this to be so easy. It wasn't.
My answer is no,
Kalana said, taking a sip of wine to conceal her sudden anger. Chu spoke up.
We would not ask if we were not confident the spell is beginning to work again. I don't care,
Kalana said, with venom in her tone.
I don't want your so-called magic to work again, if it ever did. My husband died because he believed you knew the future. Yet you didn't foresee his death, did you?
Pedrus stared down at the table, a mixture of anger and guilt flooding through his mind. It was because of advice from Pedrus that King Trehame led his royal army out that fateful summer, led the royal army to stop what the enemy had intended as a surprise attack, to seize a vital river crossing, and therefore remove thousands of acres from the realm of Tarador. The magic of fortune-telling had already well faded by then, but Pedrus knew something bad, disastrous, was about to happen, based on the fortune cards, and intelligence reports, both magic and mundane. Kalana saw an opening to shame her court wizard, who was far too arrogant for her.
My husband died because he...
Your husband died because he was a foolish ass,
Shoma said quietly. As he rarely spoke in formal meetings, everyone turned to him in shock.
I must say, this is exceptional beer. My compliments to your brewmaster.
Kalana's face was beet red.
How dare you?
I dare because I am not a citizen of Tarador, nor do I serve the royal court. I am a guest here, and guests, like children, may speak the simple truth. Your husband was wise to take Lord Salva's advice, and brave to lead his army into battle against our terrible enemy. He was foolish to think he should personally be at the head of the charge when they retook the bridge. The enemy was hoping to kill or capture the King of Tarador in battle, and he fell headlong into their trap.
An army commander commands. He doesn't fight like a common soldier. A commander, the king, belongs in the rear, where he can see and direct the battle. That is his responsibility to the army that fights for him, while your husband put his royal guards in danger because he was reckless. Your husband saw a chance for personal glory, and he died because of that, not because of any failure of magic or wizardry.
Pedras agreed with everything Shomas said. Pedras had been there, at the battle, although he had been on the other side of the river, battling enemy wizards and a troop of orcs who had sworn to kill him. He had not seen the king personally at the head of the final charge until it was too late, for Pedras was too far away, and too hard-pressed by enemy wizards to intervene. The final charge was successful, ensuring Tarador's victory in the battle, but it was a victory empty of joy. The king had taken a poisoned blade under the arm, a gap in his chainmail, and he succumbed hours later, despite the best efforts of Pedras and other wizards. Agreeing with Shomas, believing he spoke the truth, was far different from agreeing with the other wizard's blunt talk. Pedras felt he needed to object to the harsh word of his fellow wizard.
"Lord Fini, I insist you apologize to Her Highness the Regent. Her husband was brave—"
But Lady Carlana had heard enough, heard such talk before, that her husband had been impulsive in battle, and in his choice of wife. Through eyes half-blinded by tears, she stood up abruptly.
"That will not be necessary. Lord Fini, I understand you plan to leave shortly, before the winter snows block the roads to your home. See that you do. Good evening to you all."
Without another word from anyone, she spun on her heels and left the room, slamming the heavy doors shut behind her. After a minute of stunned silence, Chu spoke.
"That could have gone better."
Shomas shook his head.
"No, it couldn't. She wasn't going to allow Cecil to read her fortune, no matter what we said. And she needed to hear the truth about King Adric."
"Shomas, she is a widow, still grieving."
Shomas cut off Wing with an angry gesture.
"She was a grieving widow before she decided to become regent. Once she put that regent's crown on her head, she needed to put away her grief and do her duty. Those in power most need to hear the truth, and not indulge in happy fantasies of what they wish to believe. If she believes that wizardry, not personal foolishness, led to her husband's death, we need to correct those notions. Perhaps then she will not be so reluctant to send the royal army out to challenge the enemy, rather than sitting uselessly in garrison all season."
None of Lord Feeney's companions could find fault with his reasoning.
"Now, since there is nothing more to discuss, and I will be leaving Tarador sooner than expected, perhaps we should not let all this delicious food and drink go to waste, eh?"
Whatever the four wizards had discussed with the regent, Corrin saw that everyone left the dinner in a glum mood. Even Shomas, who ate his fill of the best the royal kitchens had to offer. The wizards talked late into the night, and awakened late, to be delighted that Corrin had breakfast ready and their clothes cleaned. After Corrin left to care for the horses, Madame Chu returned to the subject they'd discussed late the previous evening.
"Cecil, you need the regent's blood, because you think you saw a regency crown on your card."
"Yes, it was more an impression, a feeling, than something I can say for certain that I saw.
We must understand what the spirit world is trying to tell us. If we have a chance,
any chance, to know any small part of the future, we must know it," Muazzo said vehemently. "The enemy is also blinded to the future. We can be sure the demon seeks any advantage he can seize. With the regent of Tarador so adamantly against us, I do not see how we can do what we must do."
"There is another way," Wing said hopefully. "Her daughter, the Crown Princess."
Muazzo shook his head.
"No. Ariana will not become queen until her 16th birthday. Whatever the card tried to show me, that future is closer."
"I didn't mean Ariana's future. The regent is her mother, so..."
A voice trailed off meaningfully.
"They are connected! Yes, yes, good thinking, Wing," Shomas said with great enthusiasm.
Excellent.
I don't quite understand, Pedro said, confused. In this area of magic, he was no master, to his embarrassment.
Ariana's fate is connected to her mother through the Regency, and by blood, Wing explained. We can use that close connection to divine her mother's future.
The four wizards agreed that approaching the Crown Princess with a request to use her blood for fortune-telling, with her mother angry and watching the wizards closely, was not a good idea. Instead, Pedrus casually mentioned to Corin that Muazzo wished to try telling the boy's fortune again that afternoon, and that he wanted to try casting the fortune of a girl also as an experiment. And that Muazzo promised, if the fortune-telling spell didn't work, he was willing to perform other magical tricks to make up for the disappointment. Pedrus casually mentioned this to Corin, as Corin was going out the door, properly dressed, for lunch and reading old books with the Crown Princess. Naturally, Corin excitedly mentioned the fortune-telling to Ariana, who exclaimed that, in case Corin hadn't noticed, she was a girl, and she very much wanted to see magic. The spell didn't work, Muazzo said, and he expressed great disappointment, and had to entertain the princess by performing silly tricks. In truth, the spell had worked. He was much perplexed why Ariana's fortune was the same as Corin's, a blur of images. What could that mean? What were the spirits trying to tell him through the cards? Or, worse, was the future as much a mystery to the spirit world as it was to Muazzo? He finished his last trick, a simple spell which made Ariana's hair stand straight up. Then he bowed deeply and announced that, regrettably, he must return to the wizard's tower, when a painting caught his eye as he walked out the door of her suite of rooms. Your Highness, who is this in the picture? Ariana touched the gold-painted frame lovingly.
That is my grandmother, my father King Adric's mother, Queen Lilith.
And this portrait was done while she was queen, not before?
Yes. Why?
Ariana tilted her head. Wizards hardly ever took notice of the doings of the Teradoran royal court.
The crown she wears, it is rather...
He struggled for the right word, not wishing to cause insult.
Understated, is it not?
Queen Lilith wore a simple gold band, wider on her forehead, where it was inscribed with the symbol of Terador. No jewels. There was nothing fancy about it. That is, if you forgot that it was made of gold.
It is not unlike the Regency crown your mother wears.
Of course, Ariana said, as if it were the most obvious thing in the world. That is a queen's everyday crown. The big ceremonial crown is much too heavy to wear every day, Lord Muazzo. You don't wear your formal robes every day, do you?
Corin thought Lord Muazzo would indeed like to wear formal robes, and have everyone call him Lord Muazzo every day. But he kept silent. Muazzo stood rigid for a moment, his mouth open, as if he'd been struck by lightning. He put a hand to his mouth, breathed heavily, and recovered his senses.
You will wear such an everyday crown when you are queen, Your Highness?
Of course, I will wear that crown. It has been in the royal family for generations, she said with pride.
Muazzo fumbled for something to say, when all he wanted to do right then was get to the wizard's tower as quickly as he could.
I'm sure you will wear it well, Your Highness.
He bowed awkwardly, one eye still on the painting, and fairly bolted out the door.
What was that about?
Ariana asked with amusement. Corin shrugged. Wizards, if that's the strangest thing they do today, that will make me very happy. Muazzo sprinted up the stairs of the tower,
bursting in on his fellow wizards as Pedrus was reading aloud from a scroll.
"It's not a regent's crown! It's the crown of a queen! A queen!"
he shouted in excitement. Shomus almost spilled his mug of beer when Muazzo surprised them.
"Crown? What in the world are you going on about?"
Pedrus took a guess.
"The crown you think you saw, in my fortune card? It was not the regent's crown. I thought the crown you saw was too simple, too plain to be the crown of a queen."
Muazzo shook his head vigorously.
"I was thinking of the fancy type of crown a queen wears on formal occasions. Pages, but I've rarely met a queen when it was not a formal occasion. Ariana told me she would wear a very simple-looking gold band as a crown for everyday use. She will only wear the big crown with all the jewels on formal occasions. You see what this means?"
"I have no idea.
So please tell me," Shoma said.
"When I cast Pedrus's fortune, I saw two symbols, and one symbol was a crown. We thought that meant the regent, but I now know it is her daughter, the future queen."
"Wait," Madame Chu said. "You were sure the crown could not mean the princess, for she will not become queen until her 16th birthday."
Muazzo's hands made two fists, and he knocked them together.
"I cannot explain that. But the crown means Ariana. I am certain of it. I think something very exciting is about to happen. May I show you? May I cast your fortune now?"
Wing nodded.
"Please."
Muazzo smiled broadly and clapped his hands in delight. The other three stood with mouths agape. On Wing's card, clearly visible, were two symbols. A lightning bolt, a white-hot streak of fire flashing across from top left to bottom right, and a crown which, oddly, flickered from a simple gold circle to a shape more like a tiara, and back.
"What does this mean?" Wing asked in a near whisper.
No wizard had seen a fortune card display an image in many years, all across the world.
"May I cast another card before I answer?"
Muazzo said with a raised eyebrow.
"And not with one of us. I need someone who is not a wizard. We are too close to the spirit world for me to be comfortable with interpreting what the spirits are trying to tell us. I need someone not affected by magical contact with the spirit world."
"Agreed," Pedrus nodded.
He walked to the window, opened it, and leaned out.
"How about, boy? You there, boy. Cully, is it? Yes. Yes, you. Come up here, please. And bring your two companions with you. Yes, at once. Quickly, quickly now."
It was just Cully Runnett's luck to be crossing the courtyard when Pedrus stuck his head out the window. He goaded his two companions, who had never been inside the forbidding tower, through the door and up the stairs. It didn't help that Cully harshly told his friends not to touch anything, not a single thing in the tower. The three boys warily edged into the chamber where the wizards were waiting, to find not one, not two, not three, but four wizards.
Four wizards! And one of them was a pretty lady wizard.
It was all Cully could do to bow to the wizards without falling on his face. He was so nervous. The chamber, despite the winter sun peeking out between the clouds, was dimly lit. The roaring fire tinted everything in the room with a light that Cully would have called golden, except with the place crowded with fearsome wizards, it was ominous. The room was crowded not only with wizards. It was cluttered. Cabinets and tables were piled high with leather-bound books, ancient scrolls, glass jars and ceramic pots that Cully knew Pedrus used for keeping roots, herbs, odd minerals, and potions. That put Cully on edge. wondering what spells the wizards were planning to cast, spells that could not be good for three healthy boys. A burning log shifted in the fireplace and crashed onto the grate. That was enough. Cully was about to race back down the stairs when a large wizard with red hair spoke from a chair in the corner.
"Well, come in, come in. We don't bite, you know. I'm Seamus Feeney. I assume you have names also?"
All three boys were tongue-tied, so much that they barely managed to stammer out their names.
"Cully, run it, Lord, Feeney, sir."
"Stephen Bellow."
"Toman Miller."
"Well, Cully, Stephen and Toman, we want to try telling your fortunes."
Pedrus smiled in a way he hoped would be reassuring.
"All it will require is a moment of your time and a single tiny drop of blood from each of you. When you're done, each of you will be paid a silver coin."
Pedrus pulled three shiny silver coins from a pouch and laid them on the table by the window in a shaft of winter sunlight. They glittered enticingly, and the boys almost forgot their fear. Almost. A silver coin was not enough to overcome a lifetime of superstition about wizards. The idea of having blood taken had the three boys imagining horrible spells where the blood would be used to turn them into undead creatures or something even worse. Cully's two friends were shuffling their feet, considering running for the door, when Cully screwed up his courage.
"I'm ready, Lord Sarver."
"Come here, please," Moiso said, with a smile that was less reassuring than he intended. Madame Chu sought to calm the boys' fears by showing them the needles and explaining,
"Lord Moiso is going to lay three fortune cards on the table, and I am going to prick your finger with a needle. We will squeeze a tiny drop of blood onto the card, and then you can be on your way, with our thanks, and a silver coin."
Cully went first. He didn't flinch, and a truly tiny drop of blood dropped onto a card. He sucked on his finger and nodded to his two friends. In a moment, it was done.
"A lightning bolt and a crown, sir? What does that mean?"
Cully couldn't tear his eyes away from the mesmerizing images. The same images on all three cards. The crown spun and flipped from one image to another. The lightning bolt fairly crackled with energy. So bright, it almost caused spots in his eyes.
"That is wizard business, Mr. Runnett," Pedrus said, not unkindly. "Thank you, gentlemen. You may run along now. Here are your coins. Oh, and you may take that tin of cookies with you."
"Yes, sir, Lord Sarver, sir, and lords and lady, ma'am,"
Cully said nervously. Although not so nervous, he didn't tuck the tin of cookies under his arm before he bowed deeply, and the three fled down the stairs.
"So, Cecil, what does this mean?"
Seamus said unhappily, having watched a tin of cookies disappear down the stairs, cookies he'd been planning to eat. Moiso frowned.
"I don't know for certain. I will have to ponder this. Four people now have the same fortune, and I will wager my wizard's robes that if I cast the fortunes of every citizen in Linden, I would find the same two symbols, except for two people. Corin and the princess. Their fortunes are a blur of images, a blur of every image I've seen on a card. I am at a loss to tell you what that means."
Seamus pushed the cookies out of his mind.
"It cannot be a coincidence that the two people whose fortunes are unreadable are represented by the lightning bolt of a wizard and the crown of a queen."
"Except Corin is not yet a wizard, and Ariana is not yet a queen. And you say this fortune will manifest soon?" Wing asked.
"Within the year, yes. Unless I am very, very wrong.
Mwaza answered. The wizard can't be Corin then, nor the Queen Ariana. Can it?
Again, we'll return to the